The talk you are about to hear is by Roshi Amala Wrightson, teacher at the Auckland Zen Centre.
So, just to repeat, it's the 19th of March 2024. This is one in the series of talks on affirming faith and mind. And for people listening, there's a bit of a gap because the talk didn't record last week. So we're going to pick up a little before where we left off. With these verses, there is no thing that clings to us and nothing that is left behind. All self-revealing, void and clear, without exerting power of mind. Thought cannot reach the state of truth, here feelings are of no avail. I wanted just to comment a little bit on this line about thought and feelings are of no avail, because we can be misled by them. Another translation of these same lines is, it is not a place of thinking, difficult for reason and emotion to fathom. I think that's helpful, this word fathom, because really it's a matter of there being states of mind that are deeper than thought and feeling, not that we somehow have to eliminate them. If anything, we go past them. There's a passage that I wrote down many years ago from a book called For the Love of the World by the Thai forest monk Ajahn Amaro. And he puts it really well. He says, in Buddhist practice, we're not trying to rid ourselves of feeling or shut ourselves down. We're trying to understand the realm of feeling and its textures, how it can be held in perspective and used as a vehicle to help us cultivate our potential. If we let I like turn into I want, then craving leads to clinging very quickly. Clinging then leads to what we call becoming. We become completely absorbed. I've got to have this, or I can't stand that. We buy into the promise of something. We were talking about this very sequence at the very beginning of our the Affirming Faith and Mind, where it talks about not picking and choosing. We have feelings because we're human, and really even more than that, because we're sentient. The way that we experience things, either as pleasant or unpleasant or neutral, comes with our being sentient, having senses that experience things. And then from that come our likes and dislikes, which, though we can transcend them, I would guess most of us are still there. But what Ajahn Amaro points to is not going that next stage, and we often have to slow things down to really see these different stages. But the next one really is up to us. Next one, I want, is where our dukkha comes from. But we can train ourselves to recognize when we're heading in that direction, down that rabbit hole, and not go there. Or stop ourselves sooner than we might otherwise stop ourselves. The poem continues. In this true world of emptiness, both self and other are no more. In this true world of emptiness, both self and other are no more. In the Xingyin translation of this, he says, in the Dharma realm of true suchness, there is no other and no self. And I think we did get to talk to some extent last week about suchness and emptiness being two ways of thinking about the same thing or approaching the same thing, reality. And from the side of suchness comes from the side of affirming, and emptiness from the side of negating. A little bit from Xingyin now, 125. This is talking about true suchness. True suchness refers to things as they really are, without external existence. Some think that true suchness is something eternal that can be held on to, but actually there is no such thing. Neither is there any Dharma realm. True suchness is neither self nor other. Many practitioners seek to discover their self nature, which they identify with Buddha nature or true suchness. But this implies a certain existence. True suchness is neither yourself nor another. Someone said to me, I know that the self I am familiar with is an illusion. I want to find the true one. I replied, the self that you have now is illusory, but the true self is also illusory. Nevertheless, you must try to find it. If you don't find it, you won't know it is an illusion. It's an important point here. We may understand intellectually that everything is empty, and that our emotions and thoughts also are empty, non-abiding. But we don't necessarily find out the extent to which that we've really assimilated that until somebody insults us or offends us in some way. And the way that we react is telling. To enter this true empty world, immediately affirm not to, is the next verse. To enter this true empty world, immediately affirm not to. In using this word affirm, I don't know what the Chinese was, but affirm here really means to act and think and speak on the basis of everything being one or connected. He goes on, the next verse is, in this not two, all is the same, with nothing separate or outside. This not two. Immediately affirm not two. Master Xingyin continues, to be in accord with true suchness, two things cannot be different. They are not two in the sense of not being more than one. However, it would be a contradiction to speak of something according to itself. Thus, we cannot speak of one or two. We can only say not two. And you'll often hear this in the masters, that rather than saying one, they will refer to things as not two. In workshops for years and years and years, we've introduced the posture demo by talking about the way in which body and mind are not two. We can't say exactly that they're one, because they function in different ways, but nor can you say that they're two, because they're so intimately intertwined and interconnected. He says, in true suchness there must be accord, otherwise it would be non-sentient. The Buddha is in accord with sentient beings, and sentient beings can be in accord with each other. Accordance is a communication or connection between two things, such that they form a unity. An example would be a married couple. The two come together without losing their own individuality. So, understanding oneness, another way of thinking of it in terms is connectedness, interrelationship, or as Thich Nhat Hanh said, interbeing. The wise in all times and places awaken to this primal truth. This is the truth of not to, which includes everything. The ways beyond all space, all time. One instant is 10,000 years. And last week, I couldn't remember that the lines from Blake, but they are here, and it very much points to his having the same experience as we have in Zen. To see a world in a grain of sand, and heaven in a wildflower, hold infinity in the palm of your hand and eternity in an hour. This is the holographic universe which we are a part of. Not only here, not only there, truth right before your very eyes. It's because it's right under our eyes that it's so hard for us to see it. But at the same time, it is right under our eyes, and under our noses. And every moment that we experience is brimful of the potential to awakening, to awaken. Distinctions such as large and small have relevance for you no more. The largest is the smallest too. Here limitations have no place. I think also Blake said, talked about mind-forged manacles, these limitations that we impose upon ourselves and upon the world, mind-forged manacles. What is not. What is not is. If this is not yet clear to you, you're still far from the inner truth. I think these lines, Master Sangsan really gives us a powerful goad to keep practicing, to keep searching. Because what is that all about? What is not? That what is not is. What is not is. It's even chanting it right. It was hard. If this is not yet clear to you, you're still far from the inner truth. Every time we chanted this, that I would get that prod, you're still far from the inner truth, because you don't understand these lines. One way of understanding it, just in terms of an explanation, is that phenomena have no abiding self, and therefore in a really fundamental way they don't exist, they're not abiding. And from the other side you could say that no self, emptiness, what isn't, is found within phenomena. So it can't be said to not exist. A little bit from Master Xing Yin. Some Chan masters speak only of existence, and some speak only of emptiness. Others sometimes speak of existence and sometimes speak of emptiness, depending on the audience. But they are all speaking of the same thing. One time a monk complained to me, "In my opinion, most, if not all, Chan masters are lunatics. If you talk to them about existence, they uphold the idea of emptiness. If you talk to them about emptiness, they affirm existence." And that's the end of the quote. And Master Shen Yin says, "Chan cannot be spoken or conceived. Indeed, since it cannot be expressed in words, whatever you say about it, it is it as existence or emptiness, what is or what is not, can be criticized." And this is one of the dilemmas of teaching, is that really as soon as you open your mouth, you're wrong, you're said an untruth. But if we can come to realize this truth of the holographic universe, then there's nowhere to go and nothing to do. The next line goes, "One thing is all things are one. Know this and all's whole and complete." The oneness that we can experience is not that everything is sort of made into some kind of puree of featurelessness, but rather that everything in its individuality is connected to everything else. As Thich Nhat Hanh said, paper is made up entirely of non-paper elements. We're already connected in to this. It's just that so often we lose sight of that. But really, if we can appreciate all's whole and complete fully, then we don't need to hurry. We don't need to fret about coming to awakening, because we're just realizing what we already are. Now we're coming up the home straight with this affirming faith and mind. "When faith and mind are not separate, and not separate are mind and faith, this is beyond all words or thought, for here there is no yesterday, no tomorrow, no today." This is getting to the crux here. To realize this, to see it, Shen Yin says, we have to let go of our previous views, self-attachment, attachment to existence, emptiness, large and small, boundedness, unboundedness, truth and illusion. Put all of that down to reveal our inherent true nature, our wholeness and completeness. He continues, "True suchness is identical to all phenomena, and all phenomena are never separated from true suchness. It must be understood in this sense, and not in the sense that all phenomena reduce to one. There is no distinction between unification and non-unification in true suchness. It's another way of saying that diversity and oneness can exist at the same time without canceling each other out. Otherwise, taking those two lines literally would imply that one person becomes a Buddha, everyone else has to become a Buddha, or all sentient beings must attain Buddhahood before there can be even one Buddha, since all sentient beings are one. This would not hold on a common sense level, yet it can be understood on the deeper level just explained. Some people, when they start out with practice, they think that they can't make distinctions. It can be actually quite pernicious that there is a rejection of distinction. I'm trying to think of an example. People may be able to think of them. Here's one. Not. Suddenly you start practicing and then you think you shouldn't have preferences. And so you don't express your preferences and end up with choices being made that are not suitable to you. It's not going beyond thoughts and words and thoughts so much as it is getting caught up in them. When faith and mind are not separate, and not separate are mind and faith. Shen Yun says, if you have faith in the mind of equanimity and non-distinction, you have faith in no mind. However, the mind of the person who has faith is the mind of an ordinary sentient being. What the poem says is that the mind of faith is not separate from no mind, the mind that is the object of the faith. This is the same as saying that true suchness is identical to all phenomena. Although the two minds are identical, you must begin with faith to give you direction in your practice. Not only must you have faith in no mind, but you must have faith in every single word of this poem and act accordingly. In this way, you can attain the mind of no mind. We may not get to the point of having faith in every single word of the poem, but to have faith in our innate Buddha nature, to put our faith in no mind, which is no separation, no self, no other, they go together, no subject, no object. No world out there versus emotional life in here. Shen Yun says that during the course of practice, we employ the use of words to guide us. But when faith and mind are not separate, all words and language are unnecessary, including the poem affirming faith and mind. This is one of the things that is so appealing about Mahayana Buddhism, perhaps to postmodern people, is the way in which it deconstructs itself. Okay, we've just spent weeks looking at this poem, and then at the end it basically says it's unnecessary, it's empty. Throw it away. Again, during practice, there is a distinction between past, present, and future. Progress is measured in terms of time, but when faith and mind are not separate, these distinctions are abolished. And it all boils down to Moo. To watch. What is this? To the in-breath and the out-breath. Or just sitting poised in Shikantaza. Once a monk asked Su Yun, this Su Yun, we've come across him before, he's the greatest Chan monk of the 20th century, who lived to be 120. So one day a monk asked him, "Is there time in samadhi?" Su Yun answered, "If there is time in samadhi, it is not samadhi." The monk asked, "Is that in that case, can you say there is no time in samadhi?" Su Yun said, "If there is no time in samadhi, where is the person?" In samadhi, the mind is holding to one thought, so there is no awareness of time. But the meditator is still in the present moment, not in the past or the future. However, if you go one step further into no mind, you cannot even be in the present. The present can only exist in the mind in relation to past and future. That's how language works. Present only makes sense in terms of what was before and what came up, what comes after, as a concept. So that's we've got to the end of the poem. This poem, Affirming Faith and Mind, really it says the same thing over and over again, all the way through. We could boil it down to, there are many lines that we could boil it down to, but one of them is, just calmly see that all is one, and by them felt selves false views will go. Just calmly see that all is one, and by themselves false views will go. To drop our picking and choosing mind, to put our faith in no mind, in suchness, and realize it directly for ourselves. Just calmly see that all is one, and by themselves false views will go. We'll stop here and recite the four vows.
The teaching you have received is offered freely. If you would like to make a donation to support the continuation of this podcast service or learn more about practice opportunities at the Auckland Zen Centre, please visit www.aucklandzen.org.nz.